Welcome to Outside the Panels. My name is Poet Air, and joining me today, as always, is...
Chad Simons.
And Jack, a.k.a. Synesthetic.
And also today, we have a warm and big welcome for our new co-host, Blake Morgan. How you doing, Blake?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on. Woo.
I'm glad you're here. I've always thought Blake was really funny and would be good on a podcast, and I feel like pushing the momentum of the show with comedy is always good, and I think we'll have some really good conversations, get to laugh a lot. So it's really nice to have you here, Blake, and today is our first episode of our new creator focus, which is going to be Ed Brubaker, who is picked by Chaz, and I'm going to let Chaz tell you guys why you picked it and what we're going to be talking about today.
All right. I picked Ed Brubaker because he's always been one of my favorites. Ever since I really got back into reading, collecting, just anything with comics, this is a name that has always stood out to me from the very beginning. All of his stuff is infused with this real gritty criminality and noir. And it's amazing because he's really done a lot of different stuff across the board that has mixed and matched these genres. So today we're covering his Captain America kickoff, the first 21 issues of his Marvel work on the flagged super soldier, Steve Rogers. It's Red Menace, the Winter Soldier, and there's a lot of little mini arcs near the end too that are good as it builds to its giant crescendo. So, I picked him because I really like all of this noir stuff. And after a gloomy year of 2020, I thought it would be nice to dive deep into the shadows one last time before we emerge in February, hopefully brighter and refreshed.
Either that
actually,
or in
by
a
the
civil
end of this
war.
Too, I think Reckless is. Yeah, please. I guess, and in a way, it kind of works because this has that weird Cold War vibe that I feel like we're all kind of silently living in right now.
Well, actually, so, I mean, like, yeah. U.S. and U.S. officials and Chinese officials have both clearly stated that we are in a Cold War with China.
That's not good.
But yeah, this Captain America run, it's written by Ed Brubaker. The art is by Steve Epting, who I think brings a real classic and current feel to the book. It sort of has a retro futurism to like a lot of the sci-fi elements. It keeps those Kirby and early 60s and 70s Duranko vibes of the sort of bubbly space guns and helicarriers and flying convertibles. With Frank DiAmata? No.
DiAmata?
DiAmata. Frank DiAmata on I think. Cover, yeah. Color art, who really, really makes it that sort of grim and gritty while still keeping the red, white, and blues very prominent. I dug this a lot. I know we've talked about it a little bit over text, but what was your all's thoughts on Captain America?
It's so captivating. That's the one thing that really draws me to all of Brubaker's work is it sucks you in really quickly, and then you're just kind of along for the ride. And this has a lot of mystery and like puzzle pieces falling together, which is something I love about Ed's work too. I loved it. Reading again was so nice. I mean, I'd be reading this week's comics and I go back to read Cap, and it was kind of like a jarring change. Some of the comics this week were good, but not all of them are as good as this run. So, I mean, going from, like, a mediocre book back to Cap, Future State. Going back from Future State to Cap was jarring, because I'd be like, this is incredible.
Don't say that. Like, I spent a lot of money on all the fucking Future State issues.
Kind of digging it.
So, some of it's good. Some of it's good.
Hey,
Swamp
Thing's incredible.
On Next Batman, and A+.
The first... Third, no, actually, I'll lie. Two
yeah,
thirds of Next Batman I enjoyed.
Even the Outsiders bit was pretty good.
The last third?
Yeah.
Well, Outsiders was good. It was drawn by the artist from The Savage Shores, too. Yeah. And that action sequence
and
was great.
And the Mr. Miracle
short
in Superman of Metropolis was good. It's you got a lot to look forward to, right, Blake.
Cool.
Don't worry. Don't let it scare you off.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
it's
this came out 15
it's not
years
terrible,
ago,
Blake.
And it still holds up. That's wild. There's a lot of stuff. I shouldn't
it
say
does.
A lot. There's probably a lot of stuff that I haven't reread in a long time like this that I would be worried wouldn't reflect well. I was worried that Captain America especially would have been colored by how we perceived America then in the 2005s, right? So it's cool that this is political, but it's sort of apolitical. It's very grounded in the strange politics of the Marvel Universe without too much of the influence of the real world, which is nice.
Well, what we read anyway, like right where we ended, like once Civil War picks up, I mean, that starts getting pretty heavy handed. But it's what I really like about it. And I just pretty much about Brubaker's characters in general is just how like grounded and human they are. Like even like Captain America, like he sleeps with Sharon. He's angry. He's not following orders all the time. Like, but I mean, this isn't the Cap that you get all the time. Like this is a angry human Cap who's kind of like, I'm not listening to you, Nick Fury. I'm going to do things my way and I don't care. Like, and he's angry. He's Sharon, like at the beginning, like he beats that guy a little too much and like doesn't kill him, but
two people die at the beginning. Like they fell off the train.
Yeah, I want to say that my favorite thing about this Brubaker Cap is that my biggest issue with Cap is kind of like, to a lesser extent, my same issue with Superman, just like the totally OP, super goody two-shoes characters. You know, it's nice to see them kind of come unraveled like that and show like a human side. And it's also interesting to see all his like issues with his memory and like see a lot of the characters going through like identity crisis.
Yeah, I agree with both you, Jack, and with you, Blake, the way that they're grounded, especially Cap being, like you were saying, a man who's choosing to do these things, whether or not they're in the best interest of S.H.I.E.L.D. or even America. So like he's wrapped in this flag and he's an instrument essentially for these things, but he feels more like I can relate to him instead of just being a weapon or a tool. He's still like underneath conflicted about whatever he's drawn into.
Yeah, I really like the way he was written in this.
He Cap reminds me of Superman sometimes in that, like, depending on who writes him, he's really hard to connect with. He's this iconic, he's this ideal, right? This ideal that we'll never reach. Like, A, we're not super soldiers. We're not this, like, metaphor of America, you know? Like, punching Nazis and just this, like, ideal to strive for. And I really like it when we tone down those aspects and they're still icons. They're still godly, but I like being reminded that they also have like regular issues like loneliness or, you know, like we never see Cap's sexuality like ever. Like he never really lusts for women. We kind of got that in the MCU, but just a little bit, but that's not a big deal. Yeah. They do in comics into this iconic run within the first 20 issues of him, like, hooking up with his ex-girlfriend, and he's even like, yeah, it's probably not a good idea, but it's fun, you know, we're on this mission.
It's never worked in the past for any of us. Or it hasn't worked 1,000 times. And then he's like, well, I'm optimistic or whatever. And I was like, damn, Cap, take her home.
I gotta jump on that bandwagon also, because definitely the human elements making him more relatable helps you empathize with the character, and it is really nice that we get to see Cap want things that we want and make the same kind of choices we make. So it is really refreshing. And also one of my favorite parts, like we were saying, the human and grounded part, is that we get to see him go on like an old school mystery and interview people in some shithole bar, which old is probably Carly. My favorite part of this entire
thing. A lot of people don't talk around here, but old Carly ain't from around here.
It's a pretty bold move that they killed Red Skull in issue one. Like, it really helps the characters not feel unkillable and godly, you know. It shows that they are do have vulnerabilities. They're not just like bullet reflecting super soldiers.
And just also starting off like that is so intense. Like, oh, it's like, you know, you're in for a ride when in the first issue Red Skull gets sniped in his like fancy, like, you know, his like sky level suite, and he's like just talking and he gets sniped and he's down, and you're like, well, that's where we're at. That's point A. Like, what's B gonna be?
Such a such a sick villain monologue beforehand, too. Just talking about, like, how he's, why he's doing what he's doing and how he's going to punish Rogers. And he's there in the city that matters most to him. And, like, the reflection's there. And there's, like, that weird, like, superimposed Captain America's reflection, like, over as he's, like, thinking about him and what he's going to do. So you get, like, the Red Skull there and Cap behind him. Also, we should note that this Red Skull is still in a cloned body of Steve Rogers, a plot that's become fairly common, I think, in comics. But they reveal that, I think, a little bit afterwards. But it really does set a tone when your supposed big bad, after his big bad villainous speech, is just taken out, like, right away. Because what could be worse than that guy, right? What could be worse than a Nazi?
Oh, exactly. the terror himself.
It's such a great way to start it. Yeah. I wish I could go back and read this again without seeing the movies or reading it before, because just that buildup after you see Red Skull killed, you're like, well, who's going to be the main villain then? And then the slow reveal of Bucky is such an intense ride. And to have that kind of mystery again.
I have such a soft spot for Winter Soldier. And, yeah, this was reading it back when it came out. Like, I'm not huge into comics, but I did read it, like, back when it came out. And, like, that whole Bucky reveal was just phenomenal, not knowing it all ahead
of time. That was a big deal, too, when it came out. Like, I remember people freaking out because for a long time you had two different types of dead. You had this character died and they're going to come back because they're a god or they're a mutant or they sell 1,000 comic books more than any other character a month or whatever it was. You knew they were coming back. And then you had Bucky dead and Uncle Ben dead. The, like, and yeah, I guess and Gwen Stacy. But you had, like, those three guys were like the, oh, they're that kind of dead. They're dead and gone. They're there to haunt a character for the rest of their unnatural lives. Cause these,
at least until the reboot, for
longer than us. But yeah. So, like, I remember Bucky coming back and everybody, like, losing their minds over it because, like, not only did they bring back a character who would help define lasting death in comics for forever, but they did it with such a cool depth charge of new, never-told history of, like, oh, he's been around doing this Cold War shit. He's always been a ghost that spies have, like, tried to talk about. So they took this cool heroic character that everybody loved from the original Captain America run, brought him back to life against what I'm sure everybody thought was right, and made him a villain, which feels like all the shit people complain about in comics today. But 14 years earlier!
It's just the way Brubaker handles it, too. I mean, if you give any other writer there that's not as disciplined as Ed, I feel like whole story could have been a mess. But he does it so well, and with the intercut of the flashbacks of World War II, with Blake was talking about how good the Michael Lark art is, it's so damn good. It helps you dive in more into all the pathos that, you know, Cap's going through as his best friend, who he thinks is dead, is coming back, and him having to confront the fact that he's been, you know, going around murdering a ton of people for a long time.
And dossier issue, I think, exemplifies that the best, where he comes home and he finds
the Winter Soldier's
classified file, and it's just the whole issue is Steve reading it, and it's presented to us as though they're the documents and we're seeing all the flashbacks and stuff. By the end of that, the way that Steve's feeling was the way that I was feeling. I was like, they gotta get this out of there. Like, this stuff is too heartbreaking, man. I can't hang. This was his best bro, and he went around throwing a guy off a mountain while he was skiing and doing a bunch of shit. Like, oh my God.
And as you guys said earlier, people die in the very beginning of this. I don't know if you guys read the interview in the back with Ed Brubaker, but that was one of his stipulations with Marvel, is, I guess, like, his first script, he had Cap killing people, and Marvel was like, you can't have Captain America kill people. And Ed was like, he was in World War II. America kills people.
I feel like all he had to say was, this guy is falling off a helicopter that's moving at pace with a train onto a ground from a height of like 50 feet. Explain to me how that man lives instead of how Captain America throws his shield so skillfully that man doesn't die.
Exactly. It's same with the films. Think about how many people Caps had to have taken out in the actual Winter Soldier films. They'll never say it, but I mean, Cap kills people.
The MCU's done a good job of keeping that groundedness of Cap embracing the, not embracing, I shouldn't say, but recognizing that there's a cost to war.
Clearly, Feige, too, is a fan of this run, because not only do they borrow the Winter Soldier run, they borrow so much from this run, including set pieces, even though they're not the same or as related, but the airship going down, the rooftop battles, the cosmic cube being a huge centerpiece of the story. It just, Feige loves this
probably
run.
Probably one of the most, like, I would say, differentiating, almost like alien tones compared to the other movies. Like it was very much like a Tom Clancy thriller almost. It didn't have that. It had the high action, but not like the overly high action. And it didn't have the hope really of the other movies. And it was very dark and political. And that's like my favorite movie of the bunch. But when I rewatched them all, like when Endgame was coming out, like you could really watching them all that close together, like Winter Soldier sticks out so much. And then like Michael said, you read this run and there's so many little Easter eggs they picked up from this and like put in their movies. And I think that's what made it special. Cause this run is special. Like this is a big deal. Like it'll be talked about forever. Like this will be, it's on every Captain America list when I'm new to the movies or like I'm new to comics. What Captain America comics should I read? Winter Soldier, like this, like every single one, always on that list.
It's that comic run for comic fans. Like it was the first time with the Marvel movies that when they made a movie, I was excited as a nerd. Whereas all my other friends who watched MCU movies, they didn't know who the fuck Winter Soldier was or what it was about. But as soon as I got the title, I was like, yeah, like just pure excitement of knowing the journey that everyone was about to go on. Where that's like, it was cool because that was the first time they did like a comic movie for comic fans, in my opinion. I felt like it wasn't just some generalized big explosion filled film that anyone would go see that doesn't even read a comic or has never read a comic before. Like that was a little shout out to us that have actually read the comics and gone through it. Like
it's like why Rogue One was my favorite Star Wars movie, except obviously the original trilogy, is because it didn't feel like a Star Wars movie about Jedis, you know? It felt like it really just shook up the formula. It was something completely different.
No, yeah, I agree. It is so dark and grounded and serious, and it's cool to see Ed's work up on a screen and, you know, kind of get recognition, where I feel like that was kind of when he became more of an, I mean, that probably helped him get too old to die young because his name became more recognized. I'm pretty sure does he have a producer credit on it too, or just?
I think he probably has a producing. I know that he's in it as well. So he gets that little extra, extras money. Probably got that per diem, because he's one of the scientists that reprograms him. Do y'all remember that? It's him and is it the artist too? Or another? It's another Captain America person, I think, is the other scientist.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's one of the dudes that's reprogramming him when they like capture him.
That's dope.
In the movie, yeah. Man, I gotta say, I know you guys want to talk about Crossbones and Sin, because. He's pretty great. But I loved the addition of Lucan as like a villain, like this old Soviet guard villain. And even though I feel like we're a good deal out of the Cold War that Lucan was a part of, he's still like, I knew why he was bad, you know? Like we don't talk about how I feel like media doesn't have this era of bad guy necessarily as the main focus as much anymore. Cause why would they? There's way we could put Fast and the Furious in space now instead. But yeah, he's just cool, man. Like I love to hate him because he's just like this ruthless businessman who's selling these cool, super dark technologies. Like, I don't know. Just something about it. He felt like an old Bond villain. I guess part of this too has that element of like a
he does
like a James Bond. He's got it like Captain America is all that stands between the world's destruction and the total takeover by this evil corporation businessman and his science division. Like, that AIM is so present and this dude is so badass. Like, hell yeah.
Bond villain was what I was actually going to say too, but I love Lucan too. He's such a, as we were saying, everything's realistic and grounded. He's such a realistic villain. I mean, he runs a corporation. He's doing things for personal gain and also, you know, personal. Something happened to his history, to the village he's from, so a lot of it's just personal for him, but he's also doing it just for his corporation to gain, you know, power and control. And I feel like most of world villains, as you were saying, are actually, you know, these kind of people, people that run giant corporations.
I'm not going to get political, but we were just talking about this in our Discord server.
About how Bezos shut that site down. Jeff Bezos is close to Alexander Lucan. Maybe, I don't know.
I put Elon Musk as Alexander Lucan a bit more so.
Elon Musk is more Alexander Lucan. Like, if I'm going
to
have...
That fool went from out of the 50 to the number one richest man in the world. He wasn't even in the top 50 at the beginning of all of whatever. And now he's number one. That's somebody with a cosmic cube that's going to make everybody sign over their wealth to him. That's 100%. Undue influence from this glowing
Jeff
box.
Jeff Bezos has to have a cosmic cube. I think that's the thing. That's
random
the
Elon
thing
Musk
that
talk.
Would make sense. He owns one.
Yeah.
He probably had it made. He saw the movie and was like, that's a good idea. Let's
he could
make
afford
that.
One.
They've been secretly
he
working
hit up Elon
tandem.
Musk for it. That's how Elon Musk got to be the richest man in the world, is Bezos bought his cosmic cube.
The glass con they have here that my buddy's family throws. There's this Japanese artist that made a tesseract, a cosmic cube, a pure crystal, is 10 grand. And you're just like, you can look at it, and then you wouldn't let anyone touch it. And I was like, damn, that looks amazing. But he had it out on display. I was like, I would not have that on display. Just, whoop, there's like hundreds of security guards, but.
Can't risk it.
Elon Musk, random Elon Musk talk. Do you guys know why he left California and started to move his company to Texas?
Because he's slowly getting more and more ingrained in.
Something to do with labor laws,
certain,
maybe?
Certain elements? Yeah.
No, it's because the California wouldn't let him name his baby what he named it.
Really?
Oh.
It's a horrible name. I feel terrible for that child. It's just cruel to do that for publicity, to ruin a child's life for publicity.
It's an algebraic equation, isn't it? It's like, it's not even a word.
Yes, it's an algebraic equation. But then him and Grimes said it's pronounced... a certain way. But then I look at it, I'm like, what? Like, it's just...
It's pronounced.
Yeah,
he did it for publicity because he's like the eccentric media billionaire. Or not media, but the eccentric celebrity billionaire.
You know what I should have said? That they found lithium in Texas. That's why he would have moved it for sure.
There's kryptonite in the soil.
No, actually, it was during his whole thing on Twitter where he said he hates pronouns and nouns and he hates names. He was going on a rant about it. And then his girlfriend, wife had to come on and was like, Elon, it's not good to hate anything. And he was like, it's just, maybe he's just mad he was named Elon. But that guy definitely has a cosmic cube.
Oh, yeah.
If I were fighting someone at a nuclear silo that was a dangerous businessman, it'd be Elon Musk. I'd be like punching him on the side of a rocket.
Very punchable fella.
He was once selling land on Mars, which is insane. How do you own anything
on
Mars?
They're doing indentured servitude. Like, well, if you don't have enough money to go to Mars, you could sign up for a plan that's like, yeah, I'll work for my Mars freedom.
No, he's getting, like, majorly called out for, like, how instead of putting all his money and resources into protecting our planet, he's instead trying to go fuck up another planet after terraforming it.
I don't know if you remember Richard from where I used to live, that owned the parking lot. You remember him?
That douchebag.
He knew Elon Musk, and he was seriously talking to me one day. We were hanging out after I was at the Ridge Cafe, and he's like, well, here, Michael, I've met Elon Musk, and I'm about to buy 20 acres of land on Mars. And I just looked at him and was like, Richard, how do you own any land on Mars? And he's like, well, I'd get it from
And how could you even afford a flight there? You own a parking lot in North San Juan.
I know, and he's like, I've been talking about Mr. Musk, and I was just like, how does Elon Musk own anything on Mars? It's a fucking celestial planet. What are you fucking... Now we get to go back to Elon Musk, something I said I wanted to bring up. Sorry, we're going on tangent for a bit. Just enjoy the ride, strap in. Do you guys know what Elon Musk is doing this year?
Doing what?
Yeah, what?
He is using all the spaceships that he has in his space station... to film a movie starring Tom Cruise and directed by Doug Liman, the director of Go and Bourne Identity. It's going to be the first film, like, completely filmed in space, and they're filming it this summer. So this summer, Tom Cruise and Doug Liman, who's supposed to be one of the craziest directors to work for, like, he'll do 80 takes. He'll just push people to the extreme edge. He's supposed to be pretty much crazy. So they're basically sending a crazy director, I mean, I love Tom Cruise, but, you know, crazy star up to space with Elon Musk, and they're going to film this movie.
I don't know
movie.
If that sounds awesome. I can't imagine the it's going to be either it's side definitely of the spectrum. Both.
Yeah. I like the confidence they have in filming this movie with the idea that, like, all right, 2 years from now, we'll definitely be in movie theaters again, and everyone will be clamoring for as much space as they can get. We've been trapped inside. Let's go bigger than ever. We're filming in space.
It's one of the most expensive films like ever tried to take place. It's the ever attempted. Like, if they pull it off, I mean, I love the Mission Impossible movies. If they pull it off, it'll be something
we
all enjoy.
Can you imagine if their spaceship?
If they don't pull it off
during filming,
no, exactly. None of these people are astronauts. They're hiring a full film crew. They're doing it.
They're going to get trained.
What's that deal called? That's what I'm saying. The vomit rocket. When, like, they
they make you weightless,
and everybody always gets sick, and that's why they call it that. And then they're just gonna take these fucking Hollywood actors and throw them into space and be like, yeah, they'll figure it out.
You know what movie I want to see more than the movie they make? I want to see the, like, Armageddon style training of the film crew, like the oil rig crew, but like just them doing all the NASA shit and being like, I want $1 million. For the rest of my life, or whatever. Like, you know how they promise them all that.
I'm
shit?
Never going to pay taxes again.
So here's how we loop back around. Mentioning flying super tech, that flying car, and there was like one in the flying car in the Captain America books we read, or that we're reviewing. One scene where I forgot that it was a flying car, and I thought they just did a sick-ass jump and caught, like, wicked air. I was like, dope. And then it started flying, and I was like, okay, that's still dope, but slightly less dope.
it's all about lift. See, they had more air going under the car than they had going over the car. that flying car, I know we got to see it in S.H.I.E.L.D., the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show, but I wanted to see it on the movie screen so bad. Because seeing it in this book again, I was like,
I was definitely hoping to get like more of an Inspector
Gadget, like retrofuturism
kinda, situation out of that car. Like, flying is cool, but like, can its wheels like go up on stilts and have like helicopter blades come out of it and shoot marbles on the ground?
Can it turn into a very nondescript van so it could just park and monitor people secretly? We got Lucan as a main bad guy in this thing, but he's also, through his possession of the cosmic cube, come into contact with bits and pieces, fragments of Red Skull's mind, because the cube that he steals... The cube in question was made up of different cosmic cubes that Red Skull's acquired over the years or had destroyed over the years. He even mentions having it smashed in his hands by Captain America previously. So Lucan is battling for control of his mind from the Red Skull in some really striking scenes, I thought. Whenever he's looking at his reflection, he sees the skull instead. And the dialogue that the two villains have with each other as they battle for whose evil will reign supreme is like rooting for the world's worst fighters, kind of. Like, I don't necessarily know who I want to win, but I thought that was really cool.
Lucan will do less damage.
Will
he,
though?
He's only in it for personal
gain. He was ready
to
like just to
become Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, that's true. He was willing to sell that cosmic cube for money. Or at least he made it seem that way,
well,
I guess. And then when the guy
and like planned it all out, but was like too overtaken by its like enticing power at that point and its grip on his mind that like he didn't want to go through with it.
Once he realized he could just make them all sign up to work for him and make all their money instead of getting their money from the sale of the cube, like it had to have been the long con, but What about Red Skull's daughter, Miss Sin? I liked her.
Yeah.
I liked her in Crossbones' little interlude as well. They're sort of behind the scenes action.
That nice like slash torture porn while he's trying to get her to remember herself, and then the relationship goes from cold to very hot with a knife very quickly.
It sure does. In the body of a teenager, I guess.
Yeah.
It was weird that they made real reference to that, two scenes beforehand.
I have a question about all this. Why did they make that all that convoluted? Like, the fact that she was kid? I love Ed. Not saying he's anything didn't he wrong as a writer, but how is that good for the heart? I just gotta imagine. Kid? Age to 30. Age back to 16 or 17. How do you do that? And also, that's like so, that would be so bad on your blood pressure, on your veins. Like,
your cholesterol also, would be out of whack.
It is an interesting concept, though, if you like suspend your disbelief. Because, I mean, they put super serum in people and like shoot them with Tesseracts and
that's
shit.
True.
Yeah. So, like, they could probably do fucking anything at that point.
What if he was wrong, though? Like, how was Crossbones so sure? What if he just picked up some random teenager from a cell and was torturing her and beating her for weeks on end?
To be honest,
wrong one. Sorry, lady.
I mean, maybe he wouldn't care.
That doesn't sound outside of Crossbones' like, wheelhouse. The way that he says, like, dead is dead, is I think he would have just been like, well, can't make an omelet without killing some teenagers.
Yeah, I mean, could very well be that she wasn't even actually Cynthia, but he just tortured her into believing so. Who knows?
Yeah.
You can't argue with results, though.
I think the convolutedness of it was just Ed's way of saying, I see the history. I know what it is. Don't tweet at me that, like, I just made her whatever person I needed her to be. This is where
don't
they
left. Don't
ever
tweet at a creator to do that.
No, yeah. I'm not saying any of us would do that. But yeah. I definitely think that there are people out there who, well, if you read Captain America 361 from Volume 2, you would see that the machine used to make Sin younger had a setting that it wouldn't go below 13, 16 years of age because they didn't know that they could successfully make somebody go through reverse puberty. And the doctor at the time in the issue actually makes that very explicit. And if you had read that, you would know when you put her in your book that's the way it's supposed to be.
Just stay off the forums, boys.
That's my five Twitter, my five tweet, my twit longer argument for why you fucked up.
I can't stand the people that do that.
Yeah,
they drive me up the wall.
I think that was just him making lemonade out of them lemons, kind of. Like, that was the, like, I'll squeeze them before y'all get to it. I see what they did in the past. Watch me make her weird and gross. But it also fits. I think all of us kind of were talking about how that issue especially has the not the torturing her into remembering who she is, but the issue right after that has a very natural born killers vibe. And if she's supposed to be a teen attracted to an older man, then that's like Juliette Lewis and Woody Harrelson all over.
Yeah.
Like, that was a crazy ride, those issues.
Yeah, I didn't see that till you guys were talking about it. And then now I'm like, fuck, I've been reading this comic all wrong now. Because it adds like a whole new level.
Not wrong. Yeah. Well, now especially, I didn't even put it together, the like teenage element, until I said, well, it is kind of weird that she holds the knife to him and then they like bone down, even though she's supposed to be, I guess, a kid in a teenager's body, Freaky Friday style or something.
Wait, isn't a kid adult in a teenager's body? Because she was a kid.
She was a kid
then
that got aged
adult.
To an adult.
Oh, to an adult. So really, she's only like 10?
Jesus.
Maybe. I don't know. There's probably some time between when she got
How
dropped off at some hospital and this.
Consent work?
We needed to have a year when he was trying to drown her as a baby to give us a better reference to how long ago that was.
Yeah. But
because now it's just like up in the air.
But yeah, it definitely adds that extra sort of level.
I mean,
of
he is evil, so I don't think he really cares.
He's evil, but he's funny.
He is.
Old Crossbones.
Crossbones, I have a hot take on Crossbones. Let's, I'm like 100% sure. He wears man thongs. No, when
that fool goes commando,
for
sure.
He doesn't wear
underwear. No,
he
reminds me.
No, yeah.
No, He's wearing that
mesh, if anything, because it's commando with control. So my best friend,
growing up in high school, was this kid named Andrew, and his dad Steve was like a very loud and crass Republican. He was a nice guy, but he definitely had a drinking problem. And like from when I was like 14 to 17, we'd come home all the time to his house after school, and he only wore man thongs and man G strings, and they were all the American flag. And he would leave his door open.
Wow.
So he'd come in, you'd just see this 40-year-old man passed out on his stomach wearing a red, white, and blue American flag G-string and his legs out. And I just imagine that's what Brock Rumlow is wearing when he lays down. But instead of the American flag, it's a Nazi G-string. But definitely sporting it. He just has that kind of crass attitude.
It's a big red skull where the, like, the ding-dong would be. So it could be
it's
like
a red skull with a cigar. Yeah. Just
I got a red skull down below. Man, how did they fit the flag on a G-string? That's what I want to know. Like, those colors don't run.
It's in the little triangle. You know the little triangle?
Yeah,
just
but
like a small version of the stars and then the colors. For a second, like, just right there.
I think I was trying to piece it together, CSI style, the way you were describing it, where you were like, you walk into the room, he'd be passed out on his stomach, American flag G-string on, and I was like, damn, on just like the whale tail top part, like, or
male whale tail. Because I'm picturing
if he's flat down, yeah. But, oh, what a.
And sometimes he would have, like, you know, those sun hats you wear because he'd be doing yard work. Sometimes he'd just have the sun hat on too and be passed on his stomach. So it'd be like a big floppy sun hat and then just G string and ass. And it was always just from. It was because of booze.
I was about to say, like, how do you fall asleep in a hat like that? Like, I can't fall asleep in a baseball hat.
Because he always
fell
asleep on his face. Yeah. Like, he just go, like, I'm trying to make the picture to you guys. But Crossbones had his attitude.
I like the idea that he got undressed to the G-string and then put the hat back on. Like, fuck, I forgot the weeds in the side yard. And he, like, ran outside and pulled those real fast and then would just come back in and be, like, exhausted.
And that's Crossbones, ladies and gentlemen. That's
Crossbones.
Real life Crossbones.
Crossbones is who you'd find passed out in a G-string and a big old sun hat after a hard day's work.
Does he keep the mask on with the sun hat, or is he just
He's 100% a mask on all the time kind of guy.
Except he does take it off multiple times.
He does take it off, but I feel like he's the kind of person who would do that, like, Bruce Wayne Batman shit, like, Crossbones is who I am. Brock is the mask I wear for polite society. Or, no, he'd probably say, like, who gives a shit what you think? I'm Crossbones through and through. Because he seems like a real... He'd use some curse words for sure. There was one instance, I think, where they're pulling off their big scheme. And they jump out of a plane, and Crossbones says, like, adios, dipwad. And I was just like, man, we got dipwad in a Marvel book. This shit rules.
Can we cut ahead real quick beyond this story to talk about something? You guys are all hearing who Crossbones is. Is it crazy that for a short amount of time, we thought this was the person that killed Captain America?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah, he would have never pulled that off, like,
to also just ask, because Brubaker did write The Death of Captain America, and I kind of consider that, but I think this is a stronger, like, this is just a stronger example of, like, what good superhero comics can look like, because it definitely solves the Superman problem that Blake was kind of describing that we were all talking about, where you're either too super or you're too man. There's not enough balance, whereas this one shows us the ideal, but shows us the human striving for it at the same time. So, like, it's a lot more relatable. But where, do you guys remember where you were when you found out Captain America died? I feel like it's as close as I'm going to get to a president.
I was in Concord, California, and I got the issue from Flying Colors. I remember it well. And I remember thinking before then that they were going to make Bucky Cap, which they did for a very short amount of time.
Yeah. It was pretty good.
It was good. His suit was weird, but...
I knew about it before I read this run, and I read this run late. So I wasn't, like, collecting the comics when it happened, so it didn't, like, hit me like a big deal. But what I think is funny about Cap dying, and no one ever really talks about this, So both Cap and Batman died in comics at the same time. This time going around, Grant Morrison was writing Final Crisis, and Darkseid blasted Bruce Wayne into the past. And then also, spoiler alert, Captain America dies, and then we find out that Cap's not really dead. He got blasted with something and sent him into the past. So both Steve Rogers and Bruce Wayne in two different, you know, the big two publishers are both undergoing these. They're both different, but like when you strip it down, they're both going through these like arcs where they get killed, sent back in time, and then have to struggle through the timelines to come back. And it's a very good journey for both of them. But it's just, it's really funny how both of these were happening at the same time. One at Marvel, one at DC. Two of their biggest characters, both dead. Replacements have taken both the roles. Like, Dick and Damian were Batman and Robin. And Bucky was Cap.
If Marvel does something, DC does it too. And if DC does something, Marvel does it too. You know how it goes.
Yeah, true.
Just so serendipitous, though. Like, if it was one than the other, it would make sense, but almost like Blake.
That happened like the same months. Like, yeah. That was like parallel, a July.
Like, holy shit. Yeah. Crazy.
I think it was like July 2006.
The collective unconscious comics fans all was like, let's just see what happens when they die. But also, what if they didn't die? What if it was something else? Like, there's
a nice, index like, hits again.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a nice, like, 40% of us that was like, yeah, they could die. But also, there's a way to bring them back. I got my fingers crossed, too. I was in class. I was in astronomy class in college when I got the text that Captain America was dead. And I got up out of, I like packed my bag and I left. I was like, I gotta go to the bathroom. And I just never came back to class that day. I just left and I went to go get that comic, but it was already sold out. So I was like, all right, can I just read a copy instead? Do you have one that I could borrow to the guy at the counter? Like, can I just like flip through it? I just wanna know. And then I saw what happened. And then later, My mom texted me and was like, did you see that Captain America died? And in my mind, I wanted to be like, that's a spoiler. But I didn't. I was just like, holy shit, it's so crazy, isn't it? And she was like, what does this mean? And I was like, I don't know. Just that there's going to be a new Captain America, I guess. But it's crazy.
It means they need to up sales for a few months and create a huge event. And then, I mean, now they've done it. Do you remember? I mean, back then, you still weren't sure. I feel like characters would die. For me, that hit me more than Cap was right before all this. They killed Hawkeye, which growing up, he was always my favorite Avenger.
Yeah.
And
he didn't
all
even
of the
cool either.
No. That, not like this. Not like this.
Yeah. As he chooses to go out like that.
That, yeah, I know.
I could just put this backpack on this jetpack and just shoot those two things at it. No, I'll put the jetpack on and I'll shoot up there instead. Like, God damn it.
It leads to one of the best issues, though. Sorry, off tangent of Avengers, where he's actually alive and then he wanders to some weird Romanian village and maybe fucks Scarlet Witch.
Wait, did you just say that was one of the best issues of Avengers? Because I thought that was one of the worst issues.
I haven't read it since it came out 2006, but I liked it at the time, mostly because the art and hook up with Scarlet Witch.
Bone down is always entertaining.
But that was frustrating. That issue for me was so frustrating because it pointed out, it felt like Bendis walking up to the hole that he had created when he made Scarlet Witch say no more mutants and then disappear and just fuck the whole Earth over, right? The end of House of M, where everybody's mad at Scarlet Witch, but nobody can find her. And then he writes an issue where Hawkeye goes and finds her and then just leaves. Like, it was him acknowledging, like, all right, I'm going to fix this big hole in the universe I left because no other writer wants to touch Scarlet Witch or anything to do with the fallout of this event. It's too complicated. It's too tangled. I'm going to get in there. I'm going to untangle these Christmas tree lights, right? And then he's starting to pull it apart, and him and Hawkeye and her are doing stuff. And then at the end, it's just in a bigger knot, and Hawkeye just leaves. And then nobody talks about it again until, like, Children's Crusade. So I fucking hated that. It was like him going, all right, I tried my best. And it was this big knot now instead of actually being, like, untwistable. Ugh.
I think maybe it was just my soft spot for Hawkeye, which, I mean, it's weird. I don't really care for the character that much anymore. I mean, I love the Fraction run, but I feel like that was kind of the peak for me. But when I was, like, in elementary school, middle school, and high school, that was my boy. It was all about Clint Barton. I thought he was a badass, mostly because of the more Avengers talk, the Kurt Busiek and George Perez Avengers run, which, like, kind of, like, is what blew me away as a kid. That's what got me to become an Avengers fan. Because before, I was only X-Men, and then I read that Busiek Perez run, and it's so well done, and it's such, like, a huge mass of Avengers joining. I don't know if you guys have read it, but it's real good.
Yeah. I've read bits. I think the Fraction Hawkeye run is, like, the tip for me of, like, Hawkeye stuff. But that Rosenberg run just recently, Hawkeye Freefall, I get the two thumbs up on that. It was pretty good.
Yeah, you told me it was great.
It was good, yeah. And I enjoyed it. But I just didn't... It didn't hit me like Fraction did. They also didn't have 12 issues. So, you know, Fraction and AHA had more time to tell a good story and to play with your feelings and stuff, which is what that run did. But I enjoyed Matt's run, but I guess I didn't get, like, everybody was so about it. And I feel so dirty sometimes when everybody's like, this is so good. This is the best comic ever. And then I read it and I'm like, it's okay. And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with me? Like, why am I not like everybody else?
Yeah, you liked Coffin Bound more at the end, though.
I did. Having read all of it, I liked it more at the end. But so, at the time, it was definitely the way that Blake's feeling of, like, fuck, am I reading this wrong? Like, did I get the wrong printed one? What is this?
I feel that way right now about a comic. I kind of brought it up as a joke yesterday because I called it historical fan fiction and not historical fiction, but... Everyone is fucking over the wall for Killadelphia. And I read all of it. It's good. I don't understand. Because, I mean, that's why I didn't make it in my top of the year. I mean, it's really good. And Ronnie Barnes is very nice. It just doesn't
We can't discount the effect that something good comes out and people start to talk about how good it is. And then it becomes put on a pedestal and you're like, oh my God, it's going to be amazing. And then it's just a good book and you're like super let down by it. The fact that it's not godly.
I think that has a lot to do with it, too.
That happens with all forms of media, I think.
It's just, he plays with all historical figures, which I like. But then I'm also like, do we need a lesbian relationship between Abigail Adams and Sally Hemings?
Yes.
Like, he just pulls too many historical figures in. I'm like, I was okay with John Adams. And he brings Thomas Jefferson in. Okay. I'm okay. I'm going with it. Abigail Adams is in a lesbian relationship with Sally Hemings?
You don't remember that from that John Adams show with Paul Giamatti? They had Abigail and Sally Hemings back there all the time. Just like smooth, just lesbian.
It was in the letters, man. They wrote letters about it.
I mean, I learned about it in the history books. You know, that's not fan fiction.
Have you guys read it?
I learned about it on the History Channel, which definitely means it's fan fiction.
On the History Channel after midnight.
Have you guys...
Ancient aliens and ancient lesbian relationships.
I just can't figure if it's just me, because I really like the book. I mean, I purchased it. I like it. It's just not as, like, Fred said it was, like, the best book he's read in, like, 5 years, right?
It's on a big hype train, and I'm happy that Rodney Barnes is riding that.
Yeah, Rodney's awesome. He deserves
it. I really dug it. It made my top 10 also because of the art. Like, I considered the art in it. And Jason Alexander is fucking nuts. Like, I'm glad he's doing well with this Killadelphia, but, like, I give him some fucking titles, guys, because he is good. He is good.
He's real good. That art's incredible. It could be a painting. Like, his art's so top class. And I really like the Elysian Gardens in the background, the werewolf story. I mean, I really like Alvin. Ron, he's a great writer, and Jason's a great artist. I think it may have just been what Jack said, the hype train for it in the pedestal. It kind of just made me be like, this is going to be Black Monday Murders good. And that's where I feel like I probably shot myself in the foot, because when I first started, kind of the art and stuff reminded me of Black Monday Murders. But it's a very different book. It's way funnier than Black Monday Murders. It's not as serious. I mean, Sangster Sr. is always dropping one-liners that make me laugh. He's just like a dirty old man with the funniest one-liners. But I feel that way. I feel that way too. I feel like it is people putting it up on a pedestal, which is what Chaz felt with Coffin Bound until he read it again. I feel like that kind of shifts everyone's perception. But back on the cap, how much do you guys love Pillsbury, Ohio? Because is that it's in Ohio, right? I feel like that is my favorite part of the book. So short to kind of wrap up everyone. Red Skull gets killed. Lucan is basically setting the Winter Soldier to go set off these bombs that'll gain power to the Cosmic Cube. Cap finds out it's Bucky. Bucky heals himself with the Cosmic Cube, and then Cap and Sharon are on a road trip trying to find Bucky and also looking for basically Lucan's hidden bases and kind of run into Crossbones and Sin. But they go to this town to look for Bucky called, I think it's Ohio, Pillsbury, Ohio, and it has old Carly that Chaz brought up. But that's also when Sharon and Cap hook up. But that whole arc I really like because it reminds me of Ed's other work with Criminal and stuff. It's really down to earth. It has him investigating a mystery. It has great lines of them going to the motel and, you know, that classic line, two beds or one, you know, has all those classic tropes. And it really feels just kind of like a really human story. And the whole bar sequences are my favorite, as Chaz was bringing up old Carly, where what happened to old Carly?
He just beats it out of town ASAP. Or presumably. I think he probably wound up dead in an alley. Because
yeah, that's
it don't seem too good for somebody flapping their gums in Pillsbury. But
no.
I liked that town sort of gave the duality of America, right? It's this small town up top that's like doing well, thriving even. And then it's all funded underneath by this insidious element. In this case, AIM is like set up shop underneath and been developing weapons and financing the town in exchange for their silence and complicitness and letting them just be there, right? Because who would suspect? There's nothing. It's just small town America. Why would AIM put a cool advanced design weapons place underneath or whatever? So
yeah,
it's kind of neat that in a way there's a lot of, I'm sure, small towns out there that are financed by, you know, meth or
Google. That's what Google did when fiber was rolling out. They were like, let's put this complex in this little Kansas City, Kansas town and start there.
They did it in the South Bay too.
And then leave it all fucked up or whatever. So, but I thought that made it pretty interesting section of the story too. Also, the Cap and Sharon stuff is pretty great. When he
well, I feel like it's
her,
true.
She's like, "Are you drunk?" He's like, "What? No, I can't get drunk. I'm just happy." I was like, "Oh, okay." This book is filled with a lot of those little Captain America tidbits, huh? Like, he's like, "Oh, I can't get drunk." And at one point, she says, "How do you dodge bullets?" And he just goes, "I see faster."
I loved that. I really loved that line. That Ed is such a good. He writes dialogue so well, and he really gets whether it's his indie works where these characters are like his own imaginings. Like he just knows his characters so well, and he knows Cap like that too, and he knew Daredevil like that. He just that's where he excels, man. And he knows what they're gonna say in any kind of circumstance. I thought his X-Men run was very similar. You know, when he does like the Shi'ar Empire, that run and then the stuff before Fraction, like he just gets these people and he does his research and it really shows. And I think that's why that's just why he does so well. Like he just has this insight that he just, he's just too damn smart.
Yeah.
It's just the way he knows Lawlessness. He really does know all of his characters and the journeys he always is taking them on. Or you can tell he has ideas for these characters way before he ever puts it on page. Like, I'm sure he had this story rolling around his head for a very long time. Or if you read Criminal, which we'll talk about soon in a future episode, like the way he did the Lawless family story in that, he had so much of that obviously in his head before it actually got displayed on page. And it's really cool how it feels like the characters are his friends or someone he knows well.
And to think of like what he was coming from too, like right. So think if you're a writer, right? You're a comic book writer. You're struggling. So you get this Captain America gig. That's a big deal. What was he doing before this? He was writing Batman and Catwoman. Like he just got all these iconic comic gigs just back to back to back to back, and he could still get them, I think, if he wanted them. But I mean, he's more indie.
Oh yeah.
he's doing his original graphic novels with Image and stuff like that. And so, I mean, like, it, which kind of sucks because I would love to see him come back and shake up the big two.
I'd love to see him on, like, X.
Oh, dude.
Like, something with Hickman.
I'm like already buying 25 X books or however many come out every month now. But yeah, if Brubaker, I'd buy another one if Eddie came back on. I'd be like, okay, I want that in every single variant, and yeah, gimme.
Maybe he's the Moira X writer.
I was just about to say when they said that they got like the perfect Moira X, he'd be good. But I still think Remender would be better if Hickman was able to bring Remender back under the Marvel, even just for 12 issue maxi. I'd be pretty happy.
That'd be crazy.
I want it good.
Is the reason that hasn't come out yet is because they're still waiting for this writer that Hickman found?
No, it's probably because the COVID delay changed up their release schedule. Because we were going to get Children of the Atom like the middle of last year, and that shit looked weird and different. And they probably would have gauged sales on that to kind of determine what was going to be for like Moira, right? Whether it's going to get the full launch or like a mini sort of vibe. So... I think that just threw a wrench into everything, like the rollout of.
I still feel like stuff. I still feel like it's Brian K. Vaughan.
All of these choices aren't terrible.
Yeah, they're definitely worse people we could pick for this thing, but yeah.
All future people will eventually talk about. Real quick, you guys remember? I don't know if you've seen Top Gun recently, but the movie Top Gun. You remember that Tom Cruise couldn't hook up with that girl until she was dressed like a man. She was dressed like Iceman because he was really expressing his unrequited feelings for Iceman.
Well, I mean, the volleyball montage definitely taught us all about that.
I had that same feeling about Captain Sharon a little bit this issue because, like, he's excited that he knows Buck's alive and all he wants to do afterwards is fuck. Now, Sharon's the only one there. Is this unrequited love for Cap and Bucky? Did they share bunks?
I mean, it could be.
It's not very uncommon with soldiers.
Yeah, I was actually going to say when the Captain America White, the Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale book finally came out, I told everybody that it was about Captain America and Bucky's battlefield bond because that was the appropriate way to say it was their unrequited love because all of those books... Yellow, blue, gray. They're all about lost loves or they're all based around love of like between characters in a certain way, one way or another, right? Like Stacy and Karen Page and Betty.
Actually, Marvel Edition.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all jokes aside, I feel like their love is really what propels this story. And it's a good love, you know, even a friendly love. The love between Cap and Bucky is really nice. And it builds to that, you know, great moment during Red Menace where they finally get to fight with each other again. And that's such a great moment when, you know, Bucky's no longer brainwashed and they're fighting that giant sleeper robot and they get to fight together. It builds up these 21 issues so much of being like, I want them to fight together. And then they do. And it's such a
But
great
also
moment.
When they do, it's a giant fucking robot. Like how perfect.
It's a giant
like,
just, fucking robot.
Yeah, everything about this robot. Even after what we read, like once we get to the tie-ins with Civil War and stuff, like even then it excels. And then even with Cap's death, and there's a lot of people that didn't like Bucky coming on. I sure did. I don't hold allegiance to characters like these people. I love comic books. Like I tell people a lot, I don't hold allegiance to publishers. I don't hold allegiance to characters. I love it when people experiment, like take more risks. Marvel, DC, you know, indie, I feel like is all about risk already, but I just, man, I love when people switch stuff up. And I think that's why I love this run so much. Cause it just, you know, Cap wasn't the Boy Scout all the time. And then, you know, Bucky takes over the role. I really like the deal that we explored where Bucky was like this entity that could do stuff that Cap couldn't, you know, like he could be like the little stealth guy and like slit people's throats and like sneak into these like complexes and stuff. I never thought of Bucky like that until I kind of reread this again and read those interviews. So I was really digging all that. But yeah, like if any writers listen to us, like we appreciate your risks. I appreciate you getting weird with stuff. Like just
I'm all about
just,
it because I like to be
just,
surprised.
Just do it. I'll buy it. You'll have one buyer for me at least.
that's the only thing with Big Sue that kind of limits it, is like, these are the my favorite parts of comics, of when they surprise and shock me and when they do new things with characters, where the Big Two, you know, usually is more scared to do that. Like, Future State, one good thing about it is they take a huge risk with the new Batman, which is cool. It would have been, I mean, originally that was supposed to be like a real change. It was supposed to change in issue 100. Instead, we get this, like, I don't know what it is, parallel universe. But
alternate future, maybe? Who knows?
Alternate future. It's cool to see someone else take the reins and to do something different. And just to see their thought process while they're under the cowl or under Cap's suit. I'm a big fan of Bucky as Cap. I love Bucky, though. And I feel like Ed really loves Bucky. Like, I know he loves Cap, but I feel like he's definitely... I mean, the Bucky we know today is built from the ground up by Ed Brubaker. So, I mean, it's really his character. It's exciting to, you know, we're going to talk a lot of Ed's careers. I feel like, you know, a lot of these books were because of the success of Gotham Central, which we'll talk about also, which, you know, Ed kind of, yeah, he kind of takes these characters we know and brings them to new places, like we've been saying, and brings them more to reality. I mean, he makes a PD drama that could be like, he basically makes NYPD Gotham yes. Blue, basically, and it's fucking so great. Good. Yeah.
It's so good. Like, just, yeah, to think of, like, just removing Batman from Gotham, like, you're like, but then you read this and you're like, okay. Like, yeah.
Always thought, like, why would the cops hate Batman? He's fucking, like, solving all these cases for him. And then I read that and I was like, man, fuck Batman. This guy, this guy's just coming in, fucking shit up, and then dipping out. Who's left to pick up the pieces? But yeah, it's so good.
It's going to be exciting to talk about Ed's career. We're also going to kind of wrap this one up. This is probably one of the most, like, well-written Cap runs you're ever going to read. It's definitely the most defined. I couldn't think of another Captain America arc or run to tell people to read besides this one, because they kind of just go through a, you know, they wash out. I can't, like, honestly, if I think about a Captain America run, I immediately think of Winter Soldier. And that's kind of my final thoughts on this run. Like, it's the definitive Captain America run. I mean, you could write all 50 issues and you're gonna leave feeling accomplished. Even though it goes to some different places and we got the Civil War stuff, I feel like this is the story arc that definitely gave us the Bucky we know and built him from the ground up and helped, you know, define the character of Captain America well enough that we get that Cap that we love in the Marvel movies now. That's my final thoughts on this arc. I guess I'll pass it to Chaz.
Yeah. I got to agree with that 100%, but I also want to say that this book sort of exemplifies both the power of good storytelling in Ed's words and direction, but also the strength in the art and what they don't need to show. It's just a super good action-packed Captain America story. Like you said, it's sort of that definitive run. It's the one that you could say, just read this section of it and you'll have a good idea of what Captain America should kind of be, or at least have a better idea of how good Captain America can be written when he's written like a real human. So,
am I more super than a man, or am I more man than a super?
Who am I? Deep inside. No, wait. How does that Mulan sound? Like that. But you know, am I a man or am I a flag? But no, it's really, really good. The art's beautiful. It's nice and gritty and dark, but it's still filled with those real vivid colors that are important to help show, I don't know, just how bright hope and things like Captain America can be against a dark, gritty world of secrets and lies. So read this thing if you want a good Cold War drama.
Yeah, definitely read it. Quick shot before Blake comes on. The art, I can't say enough about how good the art team is. Steve Epting and Michael Lark and Diamata and Caramagna. It's great. It's such a great looking book.
It's so beautiful. And like, I really, I love Epting's work, but I really, really, really like the flashbacks with Lark and just seeing him in World War II and just how, I mean, how terrible it was, and how he still, you know, is able to just even him being a super soldier, he's still got a human mind, and he's still like, you know, war is war and war is hell. And he still went through all that more so than normal people, you know, like they utilized him in that war. And just to see him, you know, be used as like a pawn and what he had to go through, and then what how he shared that with Bucky and how their relationship blossomed. Like the way they sprinkled that in to this introductory part of Brubaker's run was pretty genius. I like seeing that side of Cap. Without modern Cap is cool, but you know, seeing how he was formed and how he became what he is now was pretty rad.
I mean,
definitely.
Yeah, I think that the war must have been especially terrible for Aquaman, standing in a blizzard in his undies and nowhere near any water.
Didn't they make a joke about that? About it? He's like, there's like, they talk about how he's not around water. But there's snow everywhere, and he's like still in his underwear.
Yeah, he's in a Speedo in a fucking giant blizzard in like Siberia. that cracked me up every time. Yes,
that's Aquaman.
Aquaman. What did I say?
You said Aquaman. I'm saying we're going to have to go on a deep dive one day on Aquaman.
See what you did there.
Me and Cap would kill Aquaman. That's just all I think of. I mean, how useless... Sorry, we're going off topic again. How useless would Aquaman be if he just left them naked with no weapons in the middle of the Siberian woods?
Yeah, I really have blizzard. No idea why the fuck
he just died.
Like, who thought it was a good idea to deploy him into Siberia in the middle of winter?
Because he's so strong.
Yeah, he was strong and he could fly. It was because like back then there was only like the two mutants, right? There was Torch, but he was an android, and then there was Submariner, right?
Oh, Submariner. That's what we ended up talking. Yeah, Submariner is just there in his undies. I was like, Aquaman's not in this, and I really see Jack's talking about. That's because he's an invader. It's Submariner and the two human torches, Jim Hammond and Toro.
Namor's listening to this episode just crying, like, they don't even know who I am.
Namor is so pissed
right
now.
I'm sure
he
gets that a lot.
He's probably, there's that thing where, like, if he's in that or air too long or in the water too long, he goes crazy. It's one of those, probably. We're still good. he'll just listen to it again after he rehydrates.
Quick Marvel news real quick. Well, Moon Knight's happening, and not only is Oscar Isaac going to be Moon Knight, but they got, I forget their names. I know one's Moorhead and one's Benson, but they got the guys that directed a great movie on Netflix called The Endless, which is fucking awesome. I don't know if you guys have watched it, and they just directed a new movie this year. They're going to direct all of Moon Knight, which they're super crazy and trippy, which makes me think they're going to go full balls out with Moon Knight, which
I hope so.
I'm excited
about.
It's going
to be crazy, like literally crazy. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I want that mushroom dead guy issue from that guy. We're not.
I want that too.
Anymore, I want that.
Blank. His run is so
it
good.
It super is. Yeah. I want that issue though. I want to see him go into the brains. Oh, so.
Oh god, that run's so good. I remember real quick, Blake. I remember when you got that. You just read it like a year or two ago.
Yeah,
right?
Last year. Yeah, I got it. I bought like all the Moon Knight
it's
stuff.
So
I was just like, okay, done.
I mean, Lemire's run is good, but the other guy who I loved and read all this stuff for most of my life that we're not going to bring
up
because
it's distilled. You know, that's what his run is. It's like, it's just pure.
It's six
it's like,
issues of greatness.
It's just like
huffing it's
18 issues, but only experiencing it for six or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, that's what that run felt like.
You know, that whole run I enjoyed. Of course, not as much as the first six issues, but when I like Brian Wood, he's another one we're not supposed to like anymore because he was,
that's
I guess
what
he
I was
a creep.
Say.
Yeah. But Cullen Bunn picked up the tail end of it, and I even like those issues. Like, he kind of brought his, like, weird indie horror element to it, and I was digging that.
Yeah, it's all good. So I guess we can just talk about Cullen and Warren and Brian's run. You know, it's weird to talk about. You got to separate the art from the artist because I can't just forget about Warren Ellis. I mean, most of the stuff I read that I still love and have all the omnibuses of are Warren Ellis. I mean, regardless of his personal problems, he wrote a fucking fantastic Moon Knight run. And I mean, he wrote mostly his career great comics. I mean, not too many faults there. I mean, shame is we recorded episodes on Nerds that'll never be released to see the light of the day now that we're all Warren Ellis based. That Moon Knight run is so good. I really hope they borrow that I'm sure they'll borrow Lemire's run too, because it's like a good setup having him in a mental hospital. But that's his six issues of the mushroom issue, the episode that's like the raid where he just goes in and fucks everyone up to rescue that girl. I mean, it's just so good. The art also by Declan is
he's crazy. Like, he's so good. Like him,
I want Injection Volume 2. Dude,
you're the one who told me to get that a long time ago, and I was like, okay, so and I got it. And I was like, what is happening? Ghost come. Whoa.
Ghost come.
A human meat.
That whole human meat issue where they're eating human meat, and then he's going through his whole sexual history from starting here, his teacher had sex with him, and then he's just telling every single person he sleeps with, man, woman, the story of his teacher sleeping with him in high school is just that whole like interplay of scenes is just, it's hilarious. Like, it's just, I mean, it goes from him being on top to him being the bottom, like just every sexual experience he ever had.
Yep. It's always sought out a rich life, right? Or a wealth of experiences is what he wanted to collect. something like that.
Yeah. He's like the coolest Sherlock Holmes. Maybe one day, and maybe in like 5 years, we'll talk about Injection. But anyway, Injection's great. This is, we start our second season a little early with the Best Of and the Coffin Bound special. So now we're fully in it. Next week, we're going to do the next episode focused on White Noise with Vault. I mean, we had a White Noise book before, but it was Image and Vault. These are going to be Vault exclusive. And we'll be talking about Ryan O'Sullivan and Andrea Mutis and Popov's Fearscape, which is going to be really fun. It's a very, very fun meta comic experience. And then we'll be back with Ed's Catwoman after that. And we're going to just go through this career and have a lot of fun. We did add Reckless on to the tail end because we all really dug that book and I'm excited to talk about it. It's like, it reminds me of a 1970s version of Drive with more dialogue, but I'm super pumped to talk about that book. Thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here as we descend into White Noise and Brubaker. As always, I'm Poet Air or Michael. You can find me on Twitter at PoetAir33. Where can they find you, Chaz?
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Chaz Simons.
And you can find me at Sin_aesthetics with an X on Twitter or on other social media platforms as Sin Aesthetic. What about you, Blake?
You can find me on Twitter at BTMorgan85, and I'm pretty sure I'm on Instagram. Yes, Instagram, same thing, BTMorgan85. I had to check. I'm not used to using Instagram. I just got back on there, so I'm like posting shit twice every time. What is it? It's weird now. I feel needy. But yeah, anyway, BTMorgan85, find me. I'm really... I'm really glad to be doing shows with these guys. They're all good people, and thank you guys again for letting me on. I'm excited for future episodes.
Wait, thank you for being on.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. It's going to be a fun journey as we grow. Great having you, brother. And then you could, like you bring a lot to it. It's a nice, your comic analysis is great. I feel like we're going to have lots of laughs ahead of us, and hopefully we go to some weird, brave places with future episodes. You can find the show on Twitter at Outside The with a zero instead of an O. You can always listen to us on Apple Podcasts. You can listen to us on Google, and you can listen to us on Amazon and Spotify. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Also, Jack is working on a YouTube channel.
I've got
channel.
It up. I just need Jack, to get some.
What is the YouTube address?
There.
Okay.
The title of our YouTube page is Outside the Panels.
Well, sweet. We're going to definitely put some more content up there soon for all of you. Thank you all for listening. It's been a great recording. I'm glad to talk about comics with these guys any day I can. And as always, be good to each other. Be good to yourself. And Chaz?
Make sure you wash your hands.
Please wash your hands. Have a great day, everyone.